Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you very much indeed for the invitation to come today and for the support from many of you over the years that I was here and was working on the book and developing these ideas at the time. I want to say also a quick message from Kay, who would be here, has had to go and see her mother on urgent family matters. So do please remember Kay in your prayers. But she does send her love. I need to say that I'm going to talk about Christianity and politics. This is a personal view. This does not represent the view of this church, or as far as I know, any church. Many people would find this controversial. Some people feel that some of it really would best be left unsaid. I feel quite strongly that in today's situation, with so much changing and the position of Christians in our sort of post-Christendom, post-Christian society changing, we need to be at least thoughtful about where we stand and what we have to contribute, and I hope you'll take it in that spirit. So I'd like just to start with a few words of scripture from Romans 13. Paul's letter to the Romans: let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. Okay, the title of the book, yes, is The Jesus Candidate. So, first of all, why that title? Well, the opening scene of the book comes from the American primaries. Do you want the next slide? This is from the 2012 contest to become the Republican candidate for the presidency of the United States. Rick Santorum was competing to be the chosen candidate of what I call the religious right, sometimes called Christian conservatives. A few days after this, he won the endorsement of the leading religious right organization in America, the Family Research Council. Particularly associated with James Dobson, but as you probably know, quite a number of leading evangelicals have been very much involved in politics, particularly Republican politics, for the last 40 or 50 years. And Rick was asked the question, surely we need an economy candidate, not a Jesus candidate. And this was his answer. We always need a Jesus candidate, but by that I don't mean a Christian, just anybody who believes in some God. So, a Jesus candidate who's not a Christian. How do we work that out? Well, next slide. If we track back, we can connect it back to the original thinkers behind the American religious right, and particularly the person who really founded it as a philosophy, a man called Rusas John Rushdoony. And this is what he said. He said, no society exists without a religious foundation. All law systems are religious in nature. All politics is a contest over which religion is going to dominate. He said that there is no such thing as tolerance in society. Any tolerance is simply a transition from one dominant religion to another dominant religion. So he understood politics to be a contest, either for some sort of Christian political system or for its rivals. He said that if we have a pluralist society with many different religious positions represented, that is actually having many gods, or it's the emergence of secular humanism as the dominant religion. Now, this philosophy has transmitted itself to Britain Next slide. So, I don't know if you can see this. This is from the kind of founding statement of the Christian Institute. To fail to privilege one religion. Beg your pardon, I'll read it off here rather than turning my back on you. To fail to privilege one religion would be for the state positively to endorse either a secular humanist philosophy, which results in atheism, or a multi-faith philosophy, which is opposed by people in all religions. So here you have this idea that the state must have a religious dominant character. That is imported from the American religious right. And that if it doesn't, then we're just endorsing secular humanism. Now, so let's have a think about where we are. We're asked to endorse a Jesus candidate. We're asked to endorse Christianity as the official religion of the state. Now, if Christianity is the official religion of the state, then the state has to decide what is Christian and what is not. That follows. And the force that will decide that need not be Christian. Yeah? A state which is not run by Christians is going to decide what is and is not Christian. That's the logic of this. Now, we don't need a prophet to tell us where this leads. We've been here before. We had 1,000 years plus, of Christendom, where there was an official church, Catholic Church. The state decided what was and was not an acceptable religion, and that system persecuted Christians. After the Reformation, under Luther and Calvin and the Reformers, for 100 years, there was still an official state religion. The Reformers said the church is all of society, and the state would decide what was and was not acceptable. That was the system. So what you got from the 1520s for 100 years was a struggle over the nature of the church. And the struggle really was between believers who said the church is a free association of believers, so the church itself decides who is a believer and who isn't. The church has the right to exclude people from the church if they're not believers. And the mainstream reformers, the Protestant reformers, who said no. The state decides what is true and false religion. And people, particularly Anabaptists, were persecuted. And, this all came to a head in America, in the colonies, in the 1630s, when the New England settlers, the Pilgrim Fathers, attracted people from Europe who wanted freedom of religion. And when they got there, they found there wasn't any freedom of religion. Not if you're a Baptist or some other form of dissident. You could be beaten, you lost the vote, and you could be expelled. Now, the person who really broke all this, next slide. I'd like to say, do you know who this is? We probably can't really see it in this light. Okay, the person who really broke this was a man called Roger Williams. Roger Williams was an Anglican minister originally, quite sympathetic to Baptists, came to New England, got kicked out of Massachusetts, and he had to go and live with Indians. Because remember, if you got kicked out of Massachusetts, there wasn't a safe haven for you. They were just the Indians. So he went to live with the Indians, he learned the Indian languages, he studied Indian society, and he bought land to found the state of Rhode Island, which was the first state, probably in the world, to give equal rights to those of all religious positions. But to get his state set up, he had to get approval from the British Crown. So he arrived in England right at the start of the Civil War, and he published an amazing book. You can find it on the internet. It's quite old English, but it's a fantastic book. It's called The Bloody Tenet of Persecution for the Sake of Conscience. Now, he showed that there could be no persecution. You cannot enforce religious truth. But he went on from there and he said, well, what makes a state good and bad? And he developed the thinking about what is good in politics and how that is different from what is good in religion. And there's extensive quotes in the book, so please have a look and or find out about it. But the key thing he said was, keep the state out of religion. And this fed through into the Civil War. A great slogan of Cromwell's army, the civil magistrate shall have nothing to do in matters of religion. Absolutely revolutionary. Presbyterians hated it. But that really was the foundation of the freedom of the church. And the really key thing there is that this was the invention of modern liberal thinking, small l liberal. The idea of people being free to associate, to communicate, to choose their own beliefs for themselves. So don't believe it when you hear that John Locke founded liberalism. 50 years earlier, Roger Williams did. Now, our history as Christians in free churches particularly, is of acceptance of this. We have accepted the separation of church and state. We have accepted a pluralist society where all faiths have equal rights. But this is rejected by the religious right, who want us to go back to the struggle for a Christian state in a situation where, of course, as Christians, we are, even as nominal Christians, we are now a social minority. And the central claim of the religious right is summed up in a favourite slogan, which is, equality law is marginalising Christians, one you often hear. So the claim is that the secular state is essentially is on the path to persecuting Christians. And they believe this because they believe the Rushdoony stuff about the nature of the state. Now, they justify this. And this is where I get quite critical, and I'm sorry, I don't want to offend people who are fellow believers, but I think truth matters. And the justification for a lot of this is cases that are brought through the courts which claim that Christians are being penalised in various ways. Now, this is important, and I've examined 12 cases in the book, and I have to say a lot of the claims are not true. Sometimes the facts as presented in the press, particularly Daily Mail, Daily Telegraph, are simply untrue. In other cases, things are taken out of context and quite exaggerated claims are put out for us. There is no evidence that the secular state systematically persecutes or disadvantages Christians. It is not true. There are problems. Of course there are problems. We know there are problems. We know that from our daily experience. But the answer is not to say the secular state is kind of anti-Christian. Next slide. Hope you can see this. I hope you can see at the bottom right, particularly a picture of a man well known to you as John Stevens, now director of FIEC. He gave a great talk a couple of months ago, and he said, in that talk, Christian campaigning organizations have fought a long war of attrition against the dismantling of a pseudo-Christian state. Christians in the UK need to return to a genuinely biblical political philosophy shorn of the mistaken assumptions of Christendom, which sees the state as a vehicle for the enforcement of the morality of the church. So what he is saying, and I agree strongly, God did not provide the church to pass judgment on non-Christians around us. And that's sort of one of the fundamental errors here. So to wrap it up, I feel we have a really important contribution as Christians. We understand this stuff. We understand where the liberal state came from. We understand how the free church and free Christian thinking created the modern secular system with the separation of church and state. We understand what real religious freedom is. There is no biblical warrant for the creation of a Christian state. When Paul called for the church in Rome to submit to the state, it was a pagan state. It was a state which promoted emperor worship. He was not saying you need to set up a Christian state. He said the state that exists, the institutions that there are around, they are part of God's provision. And the New Testament and the early church was built on that. Liberal, secular, pluralist, political society is the result, is the outcome of biblical thought and Christian struggle for the liberty of the church. We as Christians should proclaim that fact, and should our starting point and engagement with politics should be to defend the secular liberal order as legitimate. So that's all I want to say. I'd love to have questions. The book is here, and I'm offering it for £5, and you're very welcome to it. And one or two people have kindly asked me to sign it and thereby reduce the value enormously, so I don't recommend that. But if you really want me to, I will. Okay.